Y'all listening to the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, and I'm your host, Victory, BX Supreme Promoter, basically. Know what I mean? Know what I'm saying? Basically. Yo, I got comedian Rashad on the line to talk to y'all, but before I put him on the line, anybody that liked this episode of the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, listen, I'll be very grateful if anyone could, bless me with a donation, if you can. If you can't, ain't no stress. But if you can, my link is Grind Ethics Cash App. Grind Ethics Cash App. Also, follow me on Grind Ethics Mixtape Show on Instagram. Also, you can follow me on Grind Ethics Media on Instagram. Hit me up on Grind Ethics Mixtape Show on YouTube. Subscribe to me if you're a business or an artist, and I'll subscribe to you back. And not only that, I will promote your business 3 days on Instagram. Alright? No money involved. I'm on some bartering shit. You know, the money's going down every year. Right, brother? The money's going down every year. Anyway, I'm with my brother, comedian, New York comedian, Rashad. What's going on, brother?
What's going on?
Building, man. How you doing?
I'm building. I'm healing. You know, it's been a rough year for everybody. But, you know, we coming up, we rising up. You know, we starting to redefine ourselves, you know, what we, you know, who we are. And, you know, what our purpose is in life. And, you know, that's the same that's happening for me right now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you kind of serious for a comedian, man. Kick some jokes or something, man. Talk about my mama. Anyway. You know, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, I'm just like, you know, sometimes I save the jokes for, when it's time to perform on stage. But, you know, right now I just woke up, so, you know, I haven't had my tea yet.
Oh, okay, okay.
So my jokes I need tea, in order for me to be funny, you know.
Oh, for real, T? Well, my thing is coffee in order for me to record. I cannot record a show without my coffee or a Monster drink or a Pepsi. I know I'm a drug addict.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your breath going to be stinking, too. You
oh, damn.
You just can't be drinking coffee. You're like, I got to get caffeine. You know, you got to get tea. That's good for the digestive system, you know.
Okay, so what you had planning before the pandemic, man?
Oh, man, I had, so this year I celebrated 10 years in comedy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I was going to be doing a comedy, like 1 hour comedy special in August at Caroline's Comedy Club. I don't know if anybody knows Caroline's. Caroline's is probably one of the largest clubs in America. And it's right in right up the block from Times Square. So I was like, yo, I was preparing for that. Do my 1 hour special for my 10-year anniversary. And then all of this happened. So I was like, I still did my 10-year comedy anniversary at a spot in Brooklyn called Quickie's Cuisine. It's a Jamaican spot. I had a good turnout. And it was fun. It was fun. But, yeah, man, that's why I was really bummed out. But, you know, as an artist, I have to adjust to the times and to the environment. So I put out a podcast myself. I got a movie out on Amazon Prime called In There Were Four. So COVID couldn't stop progress. That's all I'm going to say.
I think it made shit better, man.
It really did. It helped comedians, some comedians. Well, it really helped me personally to write better. It helped me to really look at my life and all the things that I didn't really talk about, I could start talking about now. I got engaged. So that's a big thing. It's so when it was dark, when it there was darkness in this world. There was a very dim light, and it just got brighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So tell us how, or what made you want to get into the crazy world of comedy?
Oh, I was ashy, and I still am. I used to get into fights a lot in school. I used to get bullied, of course. You know, I always say those girls were tough growing up. So my daddy put me in martial arts. And that worked out a little bit, you know, but I was like, there needs to be more, you know. You know, when you think you're taking martial arts, you think you can whoop anybody ass, but you don't know that shit that you practice, it don't work out in the street that well. You know, I'm trying to fight somebody and I'm getting in my ready stance and they snap shit out of me. I'm like,
nah, see.
That's not how this supposed to work. I got to get my ready stance, and then you just wind up punching me in the face.
You know, you see.
You know what? I want my money back. That's all.
You see, that's the thing is, because I'm a martial artist myself, and I'm glad I never got beat up in the streets using any shit. But the thing is with that is, you got martial artist teachers that teach you how to fight in tournaments, and you got teachers that actually teach you how to fight in real life. Because in real life, when there's a real confrontation, you don't do that ready stand shit. You just do what you got to do. And
I had the whole form and everything. I had my arms in a little circle. And then, you know, somebody's like, yo, I'm about to snatch shit out of you right now. And I'm like, formation one, now. And then I just wound up getting my ass whooped. I was like, oh, okay. It happened to me one time after school. I'm playing basketball. Some girl, she kept just fucking with me. And I was like, yo, just stop bothering me. Leave me alone. You bothering me for no reason. So she get upset. Like, I offended her. I'm like, bitch, you was bothering me. And she go get her brother or whoever was her family member. And, you know, he came. He snuck me. He snuck me. So, you know, I got my back turned. I'm shooting. I turned around, and it was like a fist, like right in the sunlight, just came around. And he caught me, and I was like, oh! But that was the only hit he got. I'm going to just say that. That was the only hit he got. And then years later, this dude, he's all fat and stuff and out of shape. And I'm like, this the dude that hit me? I was so mad. I was like, you didn't even keep yourself in shape to be a bully. Like, I should whoop your ass right now. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. Because... Mike for right. That's what my instructors taught me. Mike for right. You know, don't use your skills for selfish reasons, for selfish gains. And I was like, you know what? I should push him over right now. Because he was chat. And I was like, this is the dude I was afraid of? I was so mad.
Hey, but sure enough, was a bully. It worked for him.
Shit. Sure enough, yeah, he had a whole crew with him. And all he wanted to do was fight. He was like, Leroy, I got something for you and these, hey. Who's the punk that calls himself a kung fu master? Says he catches bullets with his teeth. Yo, that was one of my... Yo, The Last Dragon is one of my favorite movies.
Yo, me too. That was one of my favorite martial arts movies. I love Last Dragon.
Oh, man.
I love listening to the damn soundtrack.
Oh, man. To reach that upper level, your body and your soul must be well. It's a sacrifice. It can't hold them. It's way alive.
That's some shit that a nigga has before he loses virginity. When you're 17, 18 years old, like...
You got that glow. You feel the. You got that glow.
the power strength is gonna let go.
That's, oh man, that's the movie right there. I might watch that tonight. Cause you know what it was? You didn't see black people as like dope. Well, no, that's a lie. Like we had Jimmy Kelly. We had Jimmy Kelly from Into the Dragon.
Okay, yeah.
So we had Jimmy Kelly. What's the other dude? He did a movie with Jim Brown. Damn, I forgot. But yeah, we had tons of black martial artists throughout the years.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can't even front. When I started looking at martial arts films, and you know, we going, you know, and I'm watching the one from the '70s. I was like, oh, we did that. For that, so I was like, okay. This makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's finish the story because we could talk about all day about kung fu and karate.
Oh yeah,
that was my fault. That was my fault, but it was funny. It makes the interview funny.
Damn, man, I actually play in the movie that I'm in on Amazon Prime. I do some martial arts stuff on there, so I'm like, all right, yeah. So this is my destiny. This is my destiny to do this.
Okay. So that's what basically made you want to become a comedian. You was like, fuck it, I'd rather do jokes and shit like that.
Right. So you know, I was like, you know, I gotta be funny. You know. People respect you. They always bring you out places. They always invite you places. So that's what I wanted. I wanted to be in with the crowd, and I wanted to be respected. So that's one of the other reasons why I became a stand-up comedian, and that's why I've been doing it for 10 years.
Now, the first time you got on, this is kind of a stupid question, but the first time you got on, was you nervous?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, who's not nervous the first time?
I tell you, the first time I ever did, I did my very first set when I was 15. This was like 2004 in February.
Mm-hmm.
So just like, and my birthday was in April. So February 2004, they had a Valentine's Day talent show.
Okay.
And at the time, you know, I'm a sophomore in high school. So, you know, I'm getting my wings under me, you know, coming up in high school and stuff. So, you know, I started a reputation where, you know, I was the funny dude. I was like the real, real silly person. So people were like, yo, you should do stand-up. I was like, I don't know. So I tried to write something down. I'm like, that's not funny. And then this girl was like, you just funny naturally. Just go up there and go off script. So I went up there, and I did like 17 minutes of just riffing off the crowd. I did impressions. I was talking about my classmates. So that was kind of like my introduction into stand-up. And then, yeah, like I started like 7 years later when I was 22 at a club downtown on the Lower East Side called Eastville, and I went in there thinking, yo, I'm the funniest dude around. No, I wasn't. I was not. They let me know right away with their silence. Nah, bruh. And I was like, ah, shit, this is gonna be hard. But I didn't quit. I just kept going forward. I didn't quit. It was some days I was like, yo, fuck this shit. And then on other days, I'd be like, oh, this is definitely going to be funny. So there was a lot of ups, there was a lot of downs, but I stayed the course. And that's why I'm here today, 10 years later, without a Netflix deal. I'm like, yo, what is going on? I'm supposed to get a Netflix deal by now, so. But I'm happy, I'm blessed.
Yeah, definitely. So how your family thought when you started kicking comedy? Was it like, yo, go get a real job, nigga? Or it was like, yo, we support you?
Well, my pops was like, nigga, get a real job. But that was, shout out to my father, Bashir. He was always, like, supporting me or whatever I was doing. My step-pops, on the other hand, was like, why you want to be a comedian? Why you want to be a comedian? You got to be insightful, and you got to know people. You got to be able to be up on current events and stuff like that. He's basically telling me, nigga, you ain't shit. Like, that's what he told.
It doesn't take a lot to get up on current events. You just got to be willing to do it.
Right. And what he didn't understand is that, you know, you got to get your feet wet with a craft like this, with comedy. You just can't go in knowing everything. And he didn't understand that. Because, you know, comedy has been a part of black people's lives for as long as they've been struggling. So, you know, black people always need to laugh. So that's why we always look to comedians to be kind of our saviors of our sanity. And, you know, my dad was looking at me like, boy, you don't clean your room, you don't listen, you always quit the job, you can't keep the job, what you want to be a comedian for? Well, that's basically what he was saying. But, you know, I didn't listen to him. I knew what I wanted to do. This was in my soul, so I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. 10 years later, I can't say he's eaten his words, but he definitely cut me with a fork and knife. So, right now, people call on me to either host, feature, or headline.
That's wonderful. So tell us about this 1 hour special that you did.
So this 1 hour special I did, I called it, the name of it is called Shiftless and Indifferent. Because that's what my stepdad used to call me all the time. He said, you're shiftless and you're being very indifferent. And I told people that, and they would always say, oh, shit, you got a dad? I was like, yeah, motherfucker, what you talking about? Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got a dad. So, you know, I figured, call myself, you know, name my special something that's completely opposite of who I am. Because people are going to be like shiftless and indifferent. First of all, it's a dope title.
Yeah. It is.
Every great comedian that does a special has a very interesting title for their special. And I said, I want to be different. I am shiftless at times, but my work ethic on stage says the opposite of that. So I said, you know what? Shiftless and Indifferent is going to be the name of my special.
That was ill. That was ill. So tell us the feedback of it.
Right. You know, I live with my step-pops and my mom like my whole life. So my stepfather and my biological father, they've been in my life equally. But, you know, more time has been spent with my stepdad because he was my primary caregiver. He was my primary person taking care of me. So he was like my father figure. I'm blessed to say that I have father figures in my life. And, you know, he didn't always understand a lot of the things that my brother and I were doing and why we, you know, weren't listening. And, you know, he was a great disciplinary, but, you know, it didn't really connect with us, you know. It wasn't working, you know. On days my mom would leave out and my dad be at home. We'd be like, oh, man. You didn't want to bother us for no fucking reason. I'm like, no. Like, like, don't you got school? Like, it's Saturday. Like, I'm, leave us alone. Like, can we? It was always that. And then, you know, as I got older and I started working, you know, I didn't stick to a lot of things that I said I was going to stick to. And, you know, I always got a lecture for that. He was always good for lectures. I was like, nigga, you need to be a college professor or something. Like, you do a lot of talking. Like, get to the point. He never got to the point in any of his lectures. Never did. He would just keep talking for 2 hours. And, like, half the time, me and my brother, we just time out. And the worst part is he'll be lecturing us and we'd be standing up. And I'm like, nigga, I'm standing up for 2 hours. So I was definitely being trained to be a stand-up comedian. Nigga, you had me standing up for 4 days. I'm like, what is 8 minutes on stage going to be? I'm like, been standing up my whole life. Thank you. And he used to call me shiftless and indifferent. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take that. Comedians... Comedy is turning the negatives into positives.
Exactly. Like, you look at Ronnie Danger. You ever seen the documentary of Ronnie Dangerfield?
I saw part of it. I didn't see the whole thing.
Yo, he lived a fucked up life. His moms didn't even love him. He had no father. I'm like, wow, this motherfucker, he lived a fuck. That's why that was the reason behind his slogan, I get no respect. Like, he really did get respect, like, most of his life.
Yo, and
it's the first time I ever felt sorry for a white man. Like, damn, I wanted to adopt a motherfucker.
Yo, his timing and his one-liners, so hilarious. Yeah. And they still work till this day.
It does, still it work does. Till this day. Yo, what's up with... Is it true that y'all comedians be on some click shit? Like, y'all don't fuck with each other unless you're down with this particular click or whatever? I heard a lot of politics and bullshit within the business.
Oh, comedy! The comedy game is like high school. It really is. It's like high school, and motherfuckers are so petty and cutthroat. And you're right, there are a lot of cliques. A certain group of comedians will hang out with each other and they will only do shows with each other and nobody else. Because in reality, comedy, this comedy game, it's a long marathon. But the stand-up performers, they treat it as a competition, you know? If a comedian knows within themselves that they dope and that they can kill any room, they know that. And so they see somebody else that can be just as good as they are, or that's even better, they won't fuck with that person. They won't fuck with that person.
Mm-hmm.
But if they get to know each other outside of the comedy game, like get to know each other off stage, and you know, they start... You know, they start talking, and they'd be like, oh, this person cool, she cool, they cool. Then, you know, they start to form a bond. And then that's when, you know, they start, you know, like, yo, I'm doing this show over here, come with me and, you know, do this show, blah, blah, blah. And that's how those cliques start. Because, you know, certain comedians who, you know, like each other's style, they start hanging around each other. Now, here's the thing with some of these cliques. Some of these cliques are comedians who don't even perform on shows. They perform at open mics. So, like, open mics, it's only comedians testing out their jokes. So it's hard at an open mic because you're trying to do your jokes and the other comedians is not laughing at what you're doing. Because they be like, oh, that's not funny. I can do a joke better than that. And that's where that judgment part happens. But those comedians that hang out in those, that go to those open mics, they wind up hanging around each other. and start following each other around. And I'm like, all of y'all are trash. Like, why? Like, why are y'all even together? Like, what are y'all doing? Like, y'all bomb everywhere y'all go. Like,
the bomb squad?
The bomb squad, yeah. Like, yeah, that's literally what they are.
That's crazy. Do you have a particular crew that you hang out with? Or are you just like...
If I see them, and, you know, we at the same show, you know, I'll gravitate towards them, you know, if I don't know nobody else. But, you know, me, I'm pretty... I'm not saying well-known, but, like, a lot of people know me. And I usually travel by myself. Like, if I'm going to a show, somebody hit me up. Be like, yo, you going to that show? And I'm like, yeah. And they be like, oh, let me meet up with you. And I'm like, all right, cool. But I have, like, two guys that I really, like, roll with. My man Justin Ramos and my guy Kevin Mason. They both from Brooklyn. And we have a show called Better Not Bring Your Kids Comedy Show. That's our brand show.
Okay.
And we call ourselves the Leaders of Stand-Up. So anytime we go to a show, you know, we rolling together, it'd be the three of us. We'll go to a show, and the producer, he'd be like, yo, y'all want to get on? And we're like, yeah. So they'll put us three up, like, back to back, because, you know, we always going, you know, we always traveling together. But since this whole thing happened, we haven't been able to, you know, link up as much. But, you know, when venues start to open back up and clubs start to open back up, we're gonna be back on it. So yes. My man Justin Ramos and Kevin Mason, those are my two people I keep close to.
Okay. Yeah, talk about this podcast you saying that you're producing right now.
All right, so I have a podcast on Anchor, on Spotify, on all podcast platforms. It's called the Struggle Beard Podcast. Now, a lot of people don't know what a struggle beard is. If you ever seen a guy that has the full beard?
Yeah.
That's just woofing. All right, they got a full beard. I have a struggle beard, means my beard does not connect. Like, it's like I got patches on my face. It just looks like little Caribbean islands just on the side of my face. It just looks like burnt cilantro under my chin. And I didn't realize that, you know, I heard this a lot from ladies. Like, oh, he got a struggle beard, And then there's a young lady, she does stand-up now. Her name is Radio Rima. Shout out to her. She's doing comedy, and she does a thing in her, she does a bit in her set called, you know, dudes with struggle beards, because they were like dudes who have a little bit of hair on their face not eating up pussy. And I'm like, let's dial that back. Okay. I'm doing my part. All right, don't do that. They're like, either you're not eating enough pussy, or the pussy that you're eating is struggling. I'm like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense.
What is struggling pussy? I don't understand. What is
I don't know, but I just checked my girl's credit score and I was like, damn, I checked my fiance's her bank account. I was like, God damn, oh man, okay, all right. I was like, babe, you gonna need another job or something? Because this right here, what is this? This is like a beard oil that guys are using. What the fuck is it called? Well, whatever that beard oil is. That's the oil that dudes be putting in their beard to, like, keep it growing and keep it, like, natural and stuff. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to use some coconut oil. That's it. I'm not using that, though. Nothing to do that. But, yeah. To close it out, my podcast is called The Struggle Beard Podcast. I do have a struggle beard. That's the point. So at the beginning of my podcast, I always talk about my struggle beard, if it's growing, if it's connecting, how it's looking today. Like, my beard is connecting. Like, I have a goatee now. You know, I'm looking like a brand new man out here. So I was like, all right, you know. But hopefully I don't have to change the name of my podcast because I really like it.
Okay. I hear that. Yo, thank you, my brother, for being on the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, man. You need to come again. Definitely, man.
Of course.
Yeah, man. And peace, and big shout out, peace to your father, man. I forgot his name, but he's the reason why we connect. I used to sell socks and t-shirts to him and all that. You know, I'm a street hustler, so.
Right.
You know, they're kicking me out the check cashing place and shit, but. But yeah, man, tell people how people can reach you.
Yeah, you can find me, Rashad Bashir, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. On IG, it's comedian_RBashir2. On Twitter, it's C_RBashir2. Rashad Bashir on Facebook. Oh, excuse me. And check out the Struggle Beard Podcast. It's on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to podcasts, look up the Struggle Beard.
Definitely, man. Thank you, my brother, for being on the show, man. Once again.
Definitely welcome. Appreciate it.
All right, peace. Yeah, that was my brother Rashad, comedian Rashad. Yo, check him out, man. Check him out, definitely, man. He's one of the comedians that's rising right now, man. I don't want to insult the brother and call him an up-and-coming comedian. He's been doing his thing for 10 years. He's definitely not up-and-coming. Yo, big shout-outs to comedian Dr. Rocco. Big shout-outs to him. Big shout-outs to my other comedian friend. I forgot her fucking name. She was on a show not too long ago during the lockdown. I forgot her motherfucking name. Oh, yeah. Del Harrison. Big shout out to Del Harrison. Anyway, I'm out. Anybody that liked this episode of the Grind Ethics Mixtape Show, I'd be very grateful if anybody would like to give a donation. My link is Grind Ethics Cash App. That's Grind Ethics Cash App. And I'm out, folks. And remember, tell a friend to tell a friend. That's all about the motherfucking grind, basically.